Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Be Bold America. I'm your host, Jill Cody, along with my co-host, Dr. Pettis Perry. Hey, Pettis, how's the weather there in Bellingham, Washington?
Well, Jill, it's a gorgeous day today here in the Pacific Northwest. I hope the same for you down in the Bay. How's it going down there?
Well, I'll call your son and add some more sun. We've got lots and lots.
You always got me on that one. You're trumping me with the sun. Hey, happy Mother's Day, my friend.
Oh, Pettis, thank you so much. Thank you.
I love you, my friend. Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you.
And happy Mother's Day to all the mothers who might be listening to the show today. Our program today is a special Mother's Day interview titled The Pandemic, Mothers in Crisis. Allison Guevara and her husband, Jay, felt like they were actually going to have heart attacks at one point during the pandemic. As a mother of three, Allison will be sharing her intense, traumatic, and stressful pandemic year with us today. How did she physically and emotionally navigate to educate her children, support her husband, work, and manage through the family illness? All these struggles were also overlaid with the emotions of the radicalized violence in our country. I look forward to learning more about how mothers can survive these enormous pressures, how they can lead their families to some sense of positive normalcy in the near term, and what we might encounter as the long-term social impacts continue going forward. Our future depends on it. Jill, you want to introduce our guest?
I would love to. Allison Guevara is a social impact consultant and mother of three children, ages 11, 8, and 2. She co-founded and currently leads the Live Oak Cradle to Career Initiative and the Central Coast Early Childhood Advocacy Network. Allison grew up in Minnesota and has lived in Santa Cruz with her husband, Jay, since 2004. Happy Mother's Day, Allison, and welcome to Be Bold America.
Thanks so much, Jill and Pettis. It's so great to be here with you.
It's great to be with you too, Allison.
Well, to begin, Allison, we'll just kick it off here. When did you first realize that the COVID virus was deadly serious and your family could be at risk? What were your first thoughts and feelings and reactions?
Yeah, it's helpful to ask that question because I feel like today is such a different day. It's so sunny and gorgeous, and I've had such a wonderful Mother's Day, so I have to kind of bring myself back. But it was sometime in March, over a year ago when the schools closed. That was really, jarring. And that was the moment where we're like, oh my goodness, what is going on here?
Well, what were your feelings and your thoughts when, oh my goodness, what's going on here? What were you feeling? It was a serious thing happening.
Yeah. It was insane. It was insane and crazy. And I definitely did not think it was going to be, that school was going to be closed for like a year. I thought maybe it was like a week or two. Until we figured out some kind of strategy. Overnight our lives were just thrown into just a pressure cooker. I mean, it was chaos. My youngest child was only one at the time and he had just started walking. So he was just like rampaging because we kept him home from daycare because our daycare actually stayed open, but at that time we were so uncertain about what the risks were and how to keep him safe and all of us safe that we kept him home. And, we had a second grader who, all of a sudden we were supposed to be doing, homework with him. This is before they got distance learning set up. And a fifth grader at the time, same thing. So it was, I don't even know how to, it's hard to even find the words. It was, and my husband and I both, work, and both of us actually had to kind of move into emergency response roles in our jobs. So my husband was assigned to the Emergency Operations Center for Santa Clara County. At my local initiative, we had a lot of families who were facing like economic crisis immediately because they were already, on the margins. And so at a time where our family was, having such intense needs just for every minute of the day, and then to add to that, just work, intensity,
speechless. Well, how did you explain the school closing to your then elementary school children?
gosh, how did we?
How did you explain that?
I think we just, you know, we didn't want to scare them, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we didn't want them to be deeply worried about what was happening in the world and in their lives. I think we just said, you know, this is a precaution, and we're going to do this just to, while we, you know, make sure we can go back to school safely.
Well, then that leads me to, how did you explain the virus to them?
Gosh, how did I explain the virus to them? I mean, they understand, you know, the older kids understand sicknesses, right? Mm-hmm. They get it. And that it's a new virus that, you know, we don't have immunity to naturally in the community. And I think, you know, we probably at that time said it was a bad flu, because that's kind of how we thought about it. Mm-hmm. Didn't quite realize how serious and threatening it was early on. I think we all just said, we're just going to be careful. We're just going to be careful and protect ourselves from germs. And they're, you know, they kind of rolled with it. I think they were very perplexed, but they did what we, you know, needed to do.
How did you keep a mask? And then the question is, how did you explain masks the same way that this is? Because now, how did you do that with a 2-year-old or a 1-year-old, or did you?
Well, yeah, we never brought him into a situation, you know, we never brought him to the store. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's funny. I'm taking him on errands. Just yesterday, I took him on some errands. We went to the library. We went to UPS, the grocery store, all in one day. And really, that was a pretty unique experience for my 2-year-old, because he's hardly been out and about because we just stayed home. And so the same with the kids, like only one of us would go to the grocery store, you know, and we didn't go anywhere else. So the kids really didn't need to wear masks at that time. And we kept them away from their friends early on in the pandemic. That obviously shifted over time as we learned more about the disease and, you know, the relative, you know, protection that children have.
So how do they handle being separated from their friends?
Yeah, I think it was really rough. But, you know, for me, on one hand, it's really intense to have multiple children in a house to care for. They had each other. So it was just like a lot of family time, you know. It was just a lot of playing with each other and watching movies together and doing our own thing. We had just started been kind of dabbling in mountain biking. My husband had been mountain biking for a few years before the pandemic. And so basically, everybody new bikes. I got an e-mountain bike, which was life-changing. And so we just started spending a lot of time mountain biking and outdoors. And that seemed to satisfy them. Although there were, I do think that, you know, we had attempts at, like, you know, Zoom hangouts with friends, and my kids had a pretty low tolerance for Zoom. It just really did not meet their needs.
Well, you did mention that you brought your 2-year-old out into the grocery store and the library. How did he react? I think we're having trouble with our clean feed connection. Maybe Christine will work on that. Allison, are you there? I think we might have lost her. Pettis, are you there?
I am.
Oh, good. Well, we're going to work with getting Allison back. So do you have any thoughts of what you've been hearing so far, or questions that we should ask her when we do get her back? We're probably going to call her back on the telephone and not work through the computer.
Yeah, I do a lot of trauma work, I think, as you know, Jill.
Yes.
And so I'm concerned about the family dynamics and, you know, how the family's getting along, and also, you know, their views on, you know, where we see ourselves going. I don't know if school's open, for example, in her area today, or whether that, you know, is something that's going to happen in the fall. So we're going to have to make lots of transitions. And all the people that I know who are psychologists and mental health workers and people who are in the business, you know, are really concerned about the post-trauma, if you will, from the pandemic and what we're going to have to do. So I'm very interested in what's going on as dynamics within their family. Because that, well, one, it'll help inform me. As you know, my son's grown and is out, so I don't have,
as
you know, something
mine.
To fix.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm really fascinated in what she's beginning to tell us about just the dynamics and navigating you know, the dynamics within the family.
Well, when we've got her back on the air, we'll ask her, or I'll have you ask her. One thing that Dr. Justin Franks was talking about recently, he's a psychiatrist or professor at the Department of Psychiatry at George Washington University, and he was talking about there really being a COVID anxiety disorder. Yes. And sort of like PTSD. And I think we're going to have Allison on the phone soon, right?
I'm back, Jill.
You're back. Hello, hello, Allison. Well, I was chatting with Pettis, and he had some questions for you. Pettis?
Hi, Allison. Happy Mother's Day to you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, and thanks for taking some time to join us today on your day. I was sharing with Jill that I do trauma work. I'm an educator, but I've delved pretty deeply into trauma and the impacts, the after effects and such. And I'm just wondering, in terms of the family dynamics that you guys have experienced, you know, how has the like how you and your husband are able to make decisions been impacted? You know, is you guys probably think differently, even though you may think alike on some things. You know, how have the way you guys process information been a plus or maybe created some struggles for you?
Yeah, thanks for that question. I mean, I think long-term trauma is one of the biggest concerns I have about what the impact on children and families has been over the course of the year, because I feel like my husband and I have a lot of things working in our favor. You know, we both had stable income. We've been together a really long time. So we've learned to communicate for the most part. Gosh, and you know, early on, we had a whiteboard set up where we had like post-it notes with all of our different meetings and who needs to be where doing what, and trying to really tag team it. And I was so grateful that I have a partner who really sees himself as a partner. And he jokes about this one case where he had a really big meeting, but he was on duty. I was in some really important meeting as well, and he had to deal with changing a number two diaper change, and then putting the baby on the backpack and bouncing with the baby on his Zoom. And so, you know, all those things worked in our favor to just help us be resilient. It's certainly very stressful. And, you know, I would say our alcohol consumption increased a bit. And I think we also just struggled with like basic things like physical space and noise. Like, he has a loud voice, I have a loud voice. Like, when we're on meeting, we had to figure out soundproofing and headphones and technology. You know, our call just dropped, right? Like, we had kids coming home with Chromebooks and iPads, and we had to figure out how to set all these things up and make sure our internet was working. And there's so many layers to it that created stress. And luckily I feel like because we live in a really great neighborhood, we were able to get outside a lot. Those were sort of protective factors for us. And I think we've been able to sort of handle the stress, you know, and like get ourselves and adapt. But that's also because we had, you know, a lot of privilege going into this. And, you know, I do really worry about those who are in more dire economic situations, more crowded housing, you know, maybe like more tense relationships where there could be domestic abuse. You know, I'm really concerned about what happened to some children during this time.
Yeah, I am too.
You're listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM. Many voices, one station. Listen globally online from the KSQD.org homepage. Here with my co-host, Pettis Perry, I'm Jill Cody.
Spend your Monday night at the opera on KSQD Santa Cruz. You'll hear the world's greatest singers tell some of the world's most powerful, romantic, funny, and unforgettable stories, all set to the most glorious music ever composed. It's all about drama and being a diva. Monday night at the opera, 7 to 10 p.m. on KSQD Santa Cruz 90.7 FM.
Today, our topic is the pandemic, mothers in crisis. Pettis and I are speaking with Allison Guevara, co-founder of and currently leads the Live Oak Cradle to Career Initiative and the Central Coast Early Childhood Advocacy Network. Now, Allison, you were talking about the Zoom meeting and changing diapers. And so how did you handle the schooling? Are the schools back in now? Are they back to school, or are you still needing to teach at home? How was that juggling between the schooling and your work?
Well, it's been an evolution. That is actually one of the reasons we did end up sending our toddler back to daycare after 7 weeks, because I couldn't even help support my second grader with his distance learning in the way that I needed to, and watch a tiny toddler. Not to mention work. And so that was one sort of thing that we did, was like a calculated risk to send our kid back to daycare. Well before vaccines, like, we're still learning about mitigation strategies. So it felt stressful and worrisome sending him to daycare, but we really had to do it. We also had we eventually around that time had our older kids start going to the Boys and Girls Club, where they had, services for essential worker families, so the children could be supervised with their distance learning activities during the school day. So that was really helpful, last spring. And then this year, my second grader, we kept him enrolled at his school, and it's a Santa Cruz City Schools, and they are now back to full time, back to 5 days a week. They're still a little bit short days. They're not the full day, but it's 5 days a week, and it's night and day. It is night and day. My kid is so much happier. He's learning so much better. I'm so thrilled that our school district was able to open the elementary school 5 days. My sixth grader, it would have been his first year in middle school. We decided to do, our school district offers a homeschooling program that was in existence well before the pandemic. And so we opted to do that because we just knew he was not going to do well with a lot of Zooms. And actually, I would say that the first 2 months of homeschooling were a lot of learning. We didn't know what the heck we were doing. But we did kind of find our groove, and he has actually done amazing. Like, we've had some really cool experiences doing, like, interest-based learning projects. And he's been pretty, like, focused and staying on his schedule, and he gets a lot of free time when he's done with his work. But early on, it was, the school was not set up for distance learning. They basically just sent home packets and told us to do things. And then it took them a while to figure out how to do distance learning, do Zooms. But even then, the Zooms were like max like 3 Zooms a day for a short time, which is different than some school districts that had, more of a full-time Zoom situation. They both have their pros and cons. But, yeah, it was a lot of making sure, like, are you logged in, Have you done your work? Did you check your Google Classroom? And, there were just times where I'm just, like, threw my hands up and just, like, I don't know, do the best you can, buddy. this is hard, and we're not going to be able to do a really great job right now at this.
Well,
we kind of prioritized their social-emotional well-being over their academics.
Yes.
That was like, I want my child to be whole, to be socially and emotionally, and then the academic stuff we'll figure out.
Well, that's probably a segue to Pettis, because he's interested in family dynamics like that. Pettis, do you have a follow-up question on?
Very much so. First of all, I want to say thank you for recognizing the privilege that you bring to the circumstance, and to acknowledge that there are so many families that don't have the kinds of resources or the abilities to make the kinds of juggling that you and your husband have been able to do. So I'm very, very happy for you guys. I really am. That's a great way to model things for others. But I just want to also, as you did, just acknowledge the people that haven't been as fortunate and don't have the kind of resources. But there's still a way to navigate this. And that's what I think we have to help people find and understand. But let me ask you, Jill and I are both big advocates for creating a meaningful life. We think that that's fundamental to having a quality life experience. So how do you guys, you talked a little bit about your mountain biking. I'm very glad you talked about, the social interactions within your family. I've heard others raise concerns about just the amount of time. So, but what are you guys doing to keep things kind of novel and doing, you know, as much as you can to stay whole as a family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for that question. I think the best thing that we did is maybe, I don't know, 8 months into this thing, we decided that everybody was going to get up in the morning, get ready and out the door at the same time to take our toddler to daycare. And it's within walking distance of our home. And so the big kids would get on their scooters, and it was just became such a sweet start to our day, and like getting physically active. And actually the reason that we did that is that one of my children was kind of doing some destructive things in his room during distance learning time. He was slicing into furniture, scraping paint off a closet door, sneaking, YouTube time through Google Classroom. And so we were just like, we knew he wasn't doing well, and we just wanted to get, like, we know how valuable it is to get out and get fresh air and get that physical activity that you would normally get every day, just going to school and getting up out the door and going to school. And so we recreated that for ourselves. And I think it's been something that we've all, even if they kind of sometimes grumble a little bit of, oh, we got to go for our walk, I think it's really sweet. And we all appreciate it. And we all start our day just feeling like physically better and emotionally better, having a little bit of activity. So I feel like being outdoors and being active has been like a lifesaver for us.
That's such a valuable lesson, I think, for everyone, you know, that we have to find a way to find some normalcy in the environment we're in. And what you've been describing, or what I've been hearing, at least in what you've been describing, are these little things that really anybody could do if they just are creative enough to think about how they could improve that moment, that situation for themselves and the people that are around them. So I applaud you guys for figuring that kind of stuff out.
Yeah, I think so. And I think those of us who have an introverted side, there was a little bit of, the pandemic kind of allowed us to embrace that part of ourselves. And life was so overwhelming to begin with. I think my husband and I both had sort of more need for that sort of recuperative quiet time. When you have three kids, including a toddler, it's just the three boys too. The house is loud. It's like constant activity. So I think that we didn't really miss. I mean, we of course missed our friends and that support that we have being part of a community, but we got a lot of that through our work because we both have, great community at work. I think that was just kind of embracing the quiet and the pause and, appreciating the quiet skies, and hearing the birds. And
yeah, I'm an introvert as well, so I get that. The thing that has become overwhelming is not being able to get out occasionally to get some social time. That's really the thing that's impacted me. But I live alone. You live with other people, so you still have that social interaction with your immediate family. So I think that's awesome. Jill?
Well, what's also amazing is that she hasn't pulled all her hair out living with all that male energy.
At least not from the picture she sent to us.
At least not from the picture she sent.
That was an old picture.
It's just that physical activity. I read a book years ago by Tom Hartman, and he wrote a book called Walking Your Blues Away. And people tell you if you're stuck on a problem or you're angry or you're feeling overwhelmed, just get up and walk outside. And it is just I was just had a smile on my face when you made that decision to have the family all get up at one time and walk the toddler to school. I just thought that is walking your blues away, is getting that blood moving. Yeah. And it's a lesson to keep sharing with your children that whenever they're stuck on a problem, just get up and walk outside for a few minutes and then come back in. That is a habit that's lifelong, even at work.
Absolutely. We've been even doing that with my sixth grader, because he's still home. I was like, hey, it's time to go around the block. And he and I will go around the block and talk and just stretch and run. And
great. Yeah. That's great. Well, we have 4 minutes to our next break, but I have to ask you this question. I'm sure We have time. And you said that both of you were going to have a heart attack. At some point, you both felt you were going to have a heart attack during this this period. What caused that reaction? When did that happen? What happened?
Yeah, I would say that was the period before we brought our toddler back to daycare.
Ah.
It's just trying to work full time, doing emergency response work, teaching kids, cooking for them every meal of the day, cleaning up after them all day long, like laundry, you know, doing everything all by ourselves. It just, my chest felt tight. So did my husband, Jay. Like, it was just hard to breathe because, you know, the demands of, I mean, anybody who's had a young child, you know, understands what that might be like, but just not having any of those normal healthy outlets you might otherwise, let's go to the library, let's go to the park. We couldn't even take our kid to the park,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Right. Right.
And then, you know, I don't have family in town. My mom is in Minnesota, my brothers and my dad was in Florida, and, you know, I don't know. It's just, yeah, we can talk more about that too.
It was nuts.
That was really a very hard part. Yeah.
Well, and I was mentioning while we were getting you back on the phone that Dr. Justin Frank, who's a psychiatrist at the Department of Psychiatry at George Washington University, was talking about COVID anxiety disorder, that's really mm-hmm. a disorder that's happened over this year, like a PTSD. And I think you just explained it very well because you didn't talk all those things that were going on. In addition, you're trying to work and school your children with everything and a toddler too. So I think that COVID anxiety disorder is probably what almost gave you both a heart attack.
Totally. I mean, there was little things too, right? Like, do we have enough toilet paper? And how are we going to get our groceries? When are we going to get our groceries? You know? And where are we going to
get
that?
Groceries?
Can you get your groceries? Can you get the toilet paper?
Yeah, the pandemic is certainly showing, you know, what mass trauma looks like in people. And it's one way or another, it's going to affect, I'm guessing, pretty much everyone in one way or another. Washing your hands more, having anxiety, getting close to people, you know, rejoining your social groups, whatever the dynamics might be, I think are definitely going to result in some negative traumatic effects and after effects.
Well, and also anxiety creates fear, and fear creates paralysis. So and all of us experiencing this mass trauma nationwide, we've yet to see, I think, as you said, Pettis, all the results or consequences of it. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM. Our topic, the pandemic and mothers in crisis. Here with my co-host, Pettis Perry, I'm Jill Cody.
Hello, K-Squid listeners. I'm Tom Hartman, and each weekday at 4 p.m., I bring you a different perspective on the news than you're likely to hear on most media outlets. Please join me on KSQD Santa Cruz, your ink spot on the dial for the Tom Hartman program, heard now for the first time ever in the Monterey Bay Area at 90.7 FM, weekdays at 4 p.m. That's Progressive Talking Conversation with me, Tom Hartman, weekdays at 4 p.m. on KSQD 90.7 FM. Tag, you're it.
And if you're just joining us, Pettis and I have been speaking with, on this special Mother's Day program, Allison Guevara, who is a wife and mother of three. And Allison, you mentioned too that all of this that we've just been talking about, using your words, you did this with an overlay of the radicalized violence that affected you all. Can you talk more about that? You know, that we have had a lot of radicalized violence on television and the radio. I don't know if it affected your children, but how did it affect you on top of everything else you were sharing with us?
Well, I think there definitely became radicalized violence. I would think of the White House attack as one of them, but there also is racialized violence.
Yes.
And you know, I am married to a person of color. And I am deeply, you know, connected to our, you know, Latinx community here in Santa Cruz County. And I also grew up in Minneapolis. and I have family in Minneapolis. And so the, police violence and the movement for racial justice and just all of this, combined together to just, and Trump was still president when this pandemic began. And there was such a horrible leadership to really address the pandemic, and not to mention to understand these how racial disparities were positioning the pandemic to only exacerbate inequities. And that's what I really fear. It has happened. Those people who had, the means to enroll their kids in private school and get them back in school, they did. And, those who didn't, they had got to just, whatever was being served up by the school district is where their kids were at, and maybe not a lot of supervision. And I know older children were enrolled to supervise your younger children, maybe at the expense of their own education. But anyway, I think the violence is, it was just, it's so indicative of the culture that Trump fueled. And I do think that there is, I know about Valerie Carr. She's a Sikh faith leader and civil rights activist. And mm-hmm. I think when Trump got elected, she gave an amazing talk about, is this the darkness of the tomb or the darkness of the womb? And I do really feel that the pandemic exposed the violence and racism that underlies so much of our society in a way that we can't turn away from that. And when we rebuild, we just have to rebuild differently and better and more equitably. And I really do hope that the movement for racial justice has built, created the momentum in that direction.
Pettis?
Yeah, I think there's going to be change. I would say that the pandemic exacerbated what was already out in the public, because the pandemic hit in the last year of Trump's presidency, but the issues that he enabled were white supremacy before he actually got elected. So I would say that the pandemic and just the frustrations and the psychological trauma that goes along with the pandemic has created more and more anger. You're seeing people lash out now because they've got to wear a face mask. How ridiculous is that? People don't want to play by the rules on an airplane. They want to play by different rules. So, we've got a lot of work, I think, that we have to do, and it's going to take people like Allison to really help us mend the institutions that we have, because we're going to, like she says, we're going to have to work through these issues. I'd like to hear more about your work, if you don't mind sharing, Allison, about the things that you're doing to help produce positive social impacts for people.
Oh, thanks for asking. Yeah. I mean, fundamentally, I'm basically a community organizer. I serve as a social impact consultant to different projects now, but it is all rooted in the power of bringing people together around shared values and shared goals and creating pathways for their voices to be heard. And when we talk about structural racism, the systems and policies and government, bureaucracies that have been designed, over years in our country left out people of color when designing those systems. And so a lot of my work is really about recentering, communities of color, and also, just the voices of children and families. And I think about Mother's Day, and I feel like how beautiful it is to see people celebrating mothers. And is it possible for us to bring that appreciation and reverence for the power of love and the power of caregiving into every day? And just imagine how different our systems could be if that was how we were centering ourselves. And with Biden's, American Families Plan, I'm just over the moon. I'm so excited because I feel the shift happening. And so I think my work is really about making sure that we have strong community organizing that's rooted in grassroots voices that really know what people know what their issues are, and they know what they need. They just need an opportunity to be decision makers and power brokers. And so that's really where the advocacy comes in. So, you know, my work is to really like help bring about those systems changes that are born from those values of love and justice and dignity.
So what is Cradle to Career, and what are you mm-hmm. doing with the early childhood advocacy?
Well, Live Oak Cradle to Career is a collective impact initiative to ensure that every child in Live Oak, which is a part of Santa Cruz County, can thrive and reach their full potential. And so we have, you know, a collective of different agencies working together, but really it's mostly led by a group of parent leaders. And so our work is to help cultivate, you know, these parent leadership committees, and then, you know, inquire with the community about what they'd like to create in terms of solutions to help their children in their education, their health, and their character development, and then bring resources to bear to really make sure these children and families are supported. So, you know, when the pandemic hit, that meant, you know, many of these are Latinx immigrant families, many undocumented, and so they could not access the state, you know, unemployment programs and things like that. And so thankfully, we have a really amazing community foundation, and we became the vehicle to pass through emergency financial aid to families. That was a big part of what we've done over the last year. But also, you know, just trying to make sure that families who might not have had internet or very good internet, like, get that set up and actually participate in distance learning. So, you know, moving forward, I think we're really excited because we have a group of promotoras who are sort of parent-to-parent community health educators, and they're doing such an amazing job to help kind of get the word out about vaccines, to address vaccine hesitancy, and then also just promote health and, you know, health and well-being in the community. So that's Live Oak Cradle to Career in a nutshell. And then the Central Coast Early Childhood Advocacy Network is just a tri-county regional network of parent leaders and advocates from different agencies serving children and families. And we do capacity building workshops to learn how to become more effective advocates and storytellers. And then we also do direct advocacy with our legislators. So actually starting next week, we're going to be meeting with all four of our state legislators. And then later we'll be meeting with Congressman Panetta once again. And we were fortunate to be able to have meetings with them over the course of this year, too, so that we kind of gave them a direct line to families and what families were facing, so that they could, that could inform their policymaking and budgeting at the state and federal level.
Nicely done. Jill?
Yes, Allison. Now, this is because it's an important subject and also something that I'm focused on. I wanted to ask you about the climate crisis, because overlaying the pandemic, family challenges, the radicalized violence, the climate crisis doesn't wait for that. And is that something that was on your mind too, or did you just put it on the back burner through all this?
Oh, I think it's definitely on my mind. I mean, so here are some ways that that showed up for me. The first was just the quietness of the early days of the pandemic and just Mother Nature just getting a break, you know, just less air pollution and traffic and less consumption. And there was something beautiful about that, and just a reimagining of maybe how we want to live. I think that happened for a lot of people. And then another big reason why the climate was on my mind is that here in Santa Cruz County, we had some of the worst wildfires we've ever seen.
Yes.
And, you know, over 800 homes in our mountains were burned down. And actually, during that time, during the fires, you know, the air quality was so bad, you couldn't let your children outside. And I had foot surgery 3 days before the fires began, or right around that time. And we decided, we evacuated up to our friends in Portland for 10 days. And I'm like hobbling around on crutches and with a boot and trying to chase my kids around and help them do distance learning. It was just so crazy. And just, you can't look away from climate change when you experience something like that. And I think we're all wrestling with that, both in terms of how we rebuild our economy in a way that's going to be environmentally sustainable and healing. How we make our peace with, you know, the changes that are coming as well, and make sure that those don't disproportionately impact certain communities, which I think is also what we're seeing.
Well, I'm so glad that you were aware of it. I was just interested in whether people were so overwhelmed with what just Dr. Justin Frank talks about is decision fatigue. You know, there's just so many things to think about and so many decisions to make. And as you said, those things that would lead to that feeling of having a heart attack, that you add the climate crisis to it, that it would just be so overwhelming. But we can't forget it here in this county because of the fires. And I think that picture of a coyote on Golden Gate Bridge was sort of iconic in how quiet everything was and how wildlife would start wandering and taking over our public spaces if we are gone for any amount of time. So it is.
Yeah, go ahead. Oh, I was just going to say, in my work, we talk about it as the triple threat. So we have these forums with, like, Congressman Panetta, you know, centering children and families at the heart of recovery. And then we talked about this triple threat of the pandemic, the climate change crisis, and, you know, racism. Ah. And all of these were coming to a head, you know, over the last year.
And then we've got also, well, I don't like to say homeless, the unhoused. The unhoused, not only in our county, but across this country. I also see that as a quadruple, I would coin the phrase quadruple threat. So, Pettis, any other, or did you have something else, Allison, you wanted to mention on that?
No, I think that when we talk about housing, though, I think that there is something underneath there that just comes back to, you know, structural racism and a tolerance for certain people not having the dignity of a home, but that somehow in our psyche as Americans, we tolerate that, like that's okay. And I think that fundamentally is rooted in kind of a perception of who that's okay for and who that's not okay for. So I think it's all connected for sure.
It is connected and it's not okay. And I think I also feel a shift happening in that area too. All of these have been, the pandemic has raised, I think, our awareness and racism in those that are unhoused and the climate crisis. Today, our topic is the pandemic and mothers in crisis. You're listening to Be Bold America on KSQD 90.7 FM. Many voices, one station. If you want to contact either Pettis or myself or have ideas for the show, you can email us at info@KSQD.org. In addition, you may text Be Bold America to 22828 and be added to our news group and be the first to hear of upcoming shows. Text Be Bold America to 22828. Along with Dr. Pettis Perry, I'm your host, Jill Cody.
Try to see it my way.
What to Be features college students interviewing creative, surprising, passionate people about their careers. If you have ever wondered what to be, please join us Sundays, 7 p.m., KSQD 90.7 FM.
On Be Bold America, we're talking with Allison Guevara. Pettis and I are speaking with her as co-founder of and currently leads the Live Oak Cradle to Career Initiative and the Central Coast Early Childhood Advocacy Network. Now, Allison, at this time, we go into talking about what listeners can keep doing, stop doing, and start doing. And, you know, we're talking about the pandemic and mothers and focus on that, but also on your work. But before we get into that, another thing that we like to talk about is principle-centered living. And what do you think you, your husband, your family, what principles do you live by?
That's a great question. I think love and justice are kind of my North Stars. Mm. And I think for Jay, it's creativity and authenticity, you know, that how can we show up in a way that's authentic to who we are and what we care about and that we're creative individuals contributing, you know, to the world. I don't know. Those are some of the values that we bring every day to our family.
Good. And then also, you know, when I wanted to get back to when you were talking about radicalized violence, just quickly, were you able to protect your children from that because of their age, the January 6th? How did that affect your children at all, or were you able to protect them?
Yeah, I think we've all had to manage, you know, our exposure to news and media, maybe more so than ever, just because, as you said, there's only so much sort of stress you can handle and information you can take in every day. And I think we certainly did have talked with our kids about what's been happening with, you know, police shootings and you know, they're really into Nerf guns, and that's been a struggle as a mom. Like, do I allow that or not, especially around my two-year-old? And you know, they don't totally understand the you know, extent of gun violence in this country, and we don't necessarily want them to understand it.
Right.
We don't want them to be afraid going to school.
So, right.
Yeah, we definitely talk with them about what's happening and kind of, but we do buffer it. We definitely buffer the information.
Well, I'm interested in that because children need to be children first and then learn about this, things like the gun violence later. But I wonder about that since my son is grown and gone, how people in these times deal with that with smaller children. So not watching the news and buffering, I guess, is the best you can do. Pettis, do you have any other follow-up questions before we go into Keep Stop Starts?
I would, and it's pertaining to your wisdom as a family and what you might be able to share with others about how to make things work. You've given us some ideas, but if you were talking to the people, the families that you work with, you know, what would you say about how you were able to make things work for your families that they may try?
Mm-hmm. Like I said, I think being active, I mean, and being outdoors is one of the most simple, free, powerful tools that we all have. I definitely feel like I've encouraged people to seek out mental health support and therapy. And I did, and my husband did during the course of this year. And that's been a big help, especially when my dad was in and out of the hospital and he did die in December.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so luckily I was able to access a therapist through my health insurance, and that was really helpful to just navigate that. And I think there's sometimes stigma around seeking out, you know, mental health care, but I really hope that changes because I think all of us could benefit from it from time to time, whether it's in our own relationships or just our own personal mental health. And I think that's something that we're advocating for children and families, that more, especially, and also mothers specifically, that they have access to mental health care, because when they are healthy, they're going to be, you know, more nurturing and better offer to support their children. We see that in the research. We know that mothers need to feel mentally healthy in order to be able to show up as best they can for their kids, and dads too, of course.
Yeah, if you're not familiar with the study, there was a study in 2013 that was conducted by the National Institutes of Health that indicated in their survey that 90% of the people they surveyed indicated they had at least one seismic event in their life, with the norm being multiple. So we had a traumatized society prior to the pandemic. And my concern on the back end is how do we deal with that? And because it does affect everyone. You look at the incidence of suicide, you look at domestic violence, you look at just the number of shootings that are taking place, everything is on the increase. So it's really what you bring up is very important about the role of mental health, and I think it's going to be even more important as we go forward.
Well, I have a question for both of you, actually. And when you were talking, what came up for me was how many people in this country are not facing reality by believing the big lie or believing conspiracy theories, the QAnon, and just things that are so outrageous. And it seems to me that is some kind of coping mechanism to this anxiety or this trauma. Pettis, your thoughts on that, and then Angela?
I think, just quickly, before Allison gets to speak about it, I think it exacerbates the problem because it confuses the messaging, and it's all about distraction, and it complicates things. It's going to make our life more difficult because it's then one more thing we have to fight through.
Allison?
You know, I have people in my family who, like, don't believe in COVID or who are not getting vaccinated.
Oh, my.
And I just, I don't understand. And these are moments where, again, going back to Valerie Power and just sort of her, she has a new book, See No Stranger, and this idea of even though I don't understand, it makes me mad, like just trying to stay curious and remember that, you know, in the big scheme of things, we're all sisters and brothers. And mm-hmm. But I don't know. I do wonder, I like what you're saying about that maybe, you know, just sort of shifting your belief system is a way to feel like you just don't have to take on the stress and the hard work in front of us as a nation, because it's going to be uncomfortable and it's going to be hard if we're going to move through this and find our way back together. You know, and I think sometimes, you know, people resist that discomfort. We all do at times.
Yeah, we've been passing the buck for centuries. You know, we need to confront the things that are, you know, immediately in front of us if we're going to move forward.
Well, what's happening with the big lie is they're not confronting what's immediately, you know, in front of us. And it's I'm seeing it as now as we talk as a reaction, a mental health issue reaction to the trauma. I don't want to think about it anymore. I'm done. You know, I'd rather believe in this conspiracy over here than face reality.
Yeah,
absolutely. And, you know, we're so lucky to live in California, though, where we have a Surgeon General, Dr. Nadine Harris-Burke, and just a whole infrastructure that's bringing awareness into the impact of adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs, and adverse community environments, the pair of ACEs. And even our county here in Santa Cruz, we have a grant that's actually helping providers become really systematic in how they're screening patients for those traumatic events and being able to have a more responsive system to intervene and help people heal. Because I think
awesome.
It's so important.
That's exciting.
That
well,
is.
We've got about three and a half minutes left. And I thought, of all this conversation, what could our listeners keep doing, stop doing, start doing, Allison? What to start with keep, what should people keep doing?
Nature.
Nature.
Keep doing nature. Yeah, active outdoors, taking care of nature. I think that we need, that's a very healing thing for all of us. And I hope
and staying connected with it.
The pandemic, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Pettis, any thoughts?
I think we need to keep working to find solutions to the problems that are in front of us.
And we have to keep facing the problems and not just giving up.
Yes.
Stop doing. What should people stop doing? Allison.
How about stop saying they're not racist and start being anti-racist? To take a note from Egan.
Yes. Yes. Bettis?
Stop looking outside for the solution. Look internally.
Mm-hmm. Can you expand that a little bit more?
Yeah.
In my work,
I work with people and try to get them to think differently. And we tend to look, we tend to blame what's outside of us. When if we just change who we are, many of those other issues that we think are bad tend to go away.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a self-development process, not something, it's not somebody else's fault. It's my fault.
Work right? From the inside out.
Mm-hmm. Work from the inside out.
Mm-hmm. And then also start doing, what should listeners start doing? Allison.
We need to honor caregivers. Mm. And that includes significantly more investments in our childcare and educational systems. And honoring the labor of women more in our society.
Wonderful. Well, you know, Allison, you probably don't remember this, but I interviewed you when we were doing the presidential election coverage. You came on to the show that I was covering with my...
I do remember.
You do remember, with Christine Barrington here. She's our engineer today, and she was there coordinating those 3 hours we were on air. And I said then, and I'm going to say it again, I hope you run for office someday when it's right, when it's the right time to bring all the knowledge that you're building and you're caring to make the world a better place. And so I'm just going to keep planting that seed in your mind.
Well, thank you for that encouragement, sister. That's what it takes to lift us up.
Yes, thank you, Angela, and happy Mother's Day again, and thank your family for us for allowing us to have you for this hour. It's been an honor.
It has been. Thank you.
Well, right back at you both. Thank you so much, and happy Mother's Day to everybody out there.
I want to thank Be Bold America's program engineer, Christine Barrington, and Howard Feldstein, KSQD's program director, and give another big thank you to today's terrific and bold guest, Allison Guevara. Coming on Sunday, May 23rd, 5 p.m., Pettis and I will be swapping our regular date with Dr. Ronnie Lipschutz, host of Sustainability Now, for his special interview on Finding the Mother Tree, with University of British Columbia's Professor of Forestry and Conservation Sciences, Dr. Suzanne Simard. Her new book, Finding the Mother Tree, Discovering the Wisdom of the Forest, has just been published. According to Dr. Simard, communication between trees happens not in the air, but deep below our feet in an incredibly dense, complex network of roots and chemical signals. She says, in a single forest, a mother tree may be connected to hundreds of other trees. That's Sunday, May 23rd, 5 to 6 p.m. on KSQD 90.7 FM and KSQD.org. Then, Be Bold America will be back on schedule Sunday, June 6th at 5 p.m., interviewing a friend of the show, former Governor of Alabama, Don Siegelman. Among many other topics, we'll be speaking to the governor about the state of our constitutional democracy, that and the constitutional democracy after the January 6th attempted coup, the laws restricting the right to vote for Americans who've been targeted to lose that vote, that right, the abuse of police and prosecutors' power, and the recall of our California governor, Gavin Newsom. That's June 6th at 5 p.m. You're listening to KSQD 90.7 FM Santa Cruz. Many voices, one station. Listen worldwide online at ksqd.org. Stay tuned for Faith Matters with Seth Shapiro. My name is Jill Cody.
And I'm Dr. Pettis Perry.
And thank you for listening to Be Bold America. Until next time, keep, stop, start.